Welcome to Growing Indoors, a new limited podcast series from Cannabis Business Times, brought to you with the support of Foes. Designed for unbelievable yields, Scorpio by Foes is the most powerful and efficient 1,000-watt LED grow light available. Passive cooling leaves its surface cool to the touch and sends more power directly to the diodes. With swiveling light bars and industry-leading lenses, Scorpio is perfect for close-to-canopy, single, or multi-level environments, providing maximum canopy penetration. Featuring specialized spectral distribution with full network control for one-touch adjustments, these lights will have even new growers operating like seasoned professionals. Schedule a facility tour today at foes.com. That's F-O-H-S-E.com. My name is Eric Sandy, and I'm the digital editor for the Cannabis Group at GIE Media. We are very pleased to get underway with this 10-episode project, where we will be focused on indoor cannabis cultivation from a broad spectrum of angles. This is episode 2. My guest is Zachary Taylor, general manager of Bountiful Farms in Lakeville, Massachusetts. Zach has a love of agriculture, sparked by his family's commercial landscaping business and its commitment to growing quality and aesthetically pleasing plants. When he began learning about cannabis and the life-changing benefits it can provide for a variety of medical conditions, he developed a passion for the human-cannabis relationship that has only gotten stronger each day. That passion has truly flourished at Bountiful Farms. Zach joined the team upon its inception in 2018, and he and the cultivation team are committed to growing exceptional cannabis, never settling for anything less than the best and never cutting corners. Starting Bountiful Farms from the ground up and being able to grow cannabis exactly how he sees fit has been a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity and something he is truly grateful for. In his career, Zach has won 28 Cannabis Cups, including the first-ever People's Choice Award for Best Cannabis in Massachusetts. That win was for Bountiful Farms' Piña Grande. And you know, we started this conversation talking about Piña Grande. Before we delved into some of the finer points of environmental controls and metrics and data, the in-depth tracking and analysis needed to run an indoor cannabis cultivation facility, over the next 9 episodes, we're going to be talking about that and much more. This episode, of course, focuses on those environmental controls, but there's more to come. Please, along the way, get in touch on Instagram or LinkedIn through Cannabis Business Times accounts. Do give Foes a shout-out on their accounts as well. We would not be here were it not for their support. And just know that as we continue this series, we are here to listen and serve the market. So for now, please enjoy my conversation with Zachary Taylor. All right, Zach. Well, thanks so much for joining the show this week. Very glad to have you on board to talk a bit about environmental controls, which, of course, is a fairly multifaceted topic. We can get into a few of the specifics as we go along. But, you know, I kind of wanted to begin just by backing up a little bit with last fall. And that's, of course, the fall of 2021, where you and your team brought home a few awards from the Massachusetts Cannabis Cup. And, you know, it brought home a number of awards. I wanted to maybe focus on flower in particular. I think as we get into the environmental controls conversation, this might be a nice scene setter to begin with. Could you talk a bit about the flower that brought home some awards, particularly Secret Formula and Piña Grande?
Absolutely. Well, first off, thank you for having me, Eric. Truly is a pleasure. We dropped seed in February of 20. Our dispensary opened October of that same year. And we've really only been in the market for, as we hit our 2-year birthday here in February coming up here. So it was, really a huge honor to be recognized by the Massachusetts community. And so the particular cups you're talking about was the Cultivator's Cup, which was basically, it was a kit. There was 28 1-gram drams that were given to everyone. And it was completely non-branded, non-affiliated, just kind of letting the flower speak for itself. And so it was a huge honor. There was 4 different categories that they rated that flower on. Everything from terpenes, best taste, best cure, best overall. And, we were incredibly honored to, we won 4 out of the 5 categories. And so the overall winner was our Piña Grande, which I think, kind of shows some of the market trend of kind of going after what they're now calling some of these legacy strains. So Pina Grande is an old school pineapple chunk that Dean, we crossed with a reversed Skywalker OG. I'm born and raised in Denver, Colorado. So I've been thankful enough to be in the industry for a little bit here. And so I did a breeding project with Cali Connection and my good friend Malik. And we created Pina Grande, I want to say back in 14 or 15. And then, you know, we did a pretty large pheno hunt here in Bountiful Farms, went through about 500 of those, you know, different looking for, you know, different phenotypical expressions, you know, obviously throughout the same genome. And then kind of what we found on that was the perfect hybrid. So what I mean by that is Pineapple Chunk is known for kind of how she stacks and her internodal, you know, growth and whatnot. And so we kind of found that with that perfect blend of an OG. And that's what ended up winning best overall. And then the secret formula is an archive cross, and that's a Y543 times a Dosi. And that's actually the Jungle Boys cut of Dosi, where I think kind of the whole secret formula, secret sauce name comes from. And again, I think that just shows people are, you know, really liking and appreciate the legacy strains. You know, that is just a true OG, you know, lover strain. So we found a really nice cultivar and cut of her. And so, you know, again, it just is, We pride ourselves in flower is king, and there's certainly a million ways to skin this cat, and you know, plethora of business models you can come forth with. But ours is really, you know, putting our best foot forward and our passion in the flower itself. And so to have Massachusetts, you know, kind of, you know, reiterate that and appreciate that, it meant a lot to us.
Certainly, yeah, and I think you know, those two cultivars might be some interesting examples that we can return to as we get into some more specific environmental control topics here. But maybe to further set the stage, I know you provided a bit of background there on Bountiful Farms, but could you maybe describe the facility, the cultivation facility, I mean, and maybe some of the unique traits or characteristics that you enjoy most about working in there?
Yeah, absolutely. So we operate a 45,000 square foot facility in Lakeville, Massachusetts. And, you know, it's a lot of people, you know, use the word state of the art. And I certainly, you know, there are other state of the art facilities out there. But, you know, we're really happy with the implementation of design that was put forth. And I think it kind of takes, you know, multiple hats and multiple skill sets and multiple expertise. So I've been with this company since conception. And so I think that's the first and foremost thing that's important, is because every grower grows differently, I think it's incredibly important for the grower to be in on the ground floor, so that you're designing a grow that complements their growing style. And then, you know, I think it's incredibly important to you know, spec the, you know, the British thermal units, you know, not only for cooling, but for dehumidification as well. And so, you know, we really tried to, you know, there was over a year and a half of design and, you know, going back and forth and working with intellectuals way beyond, you know, my intellect. So one of those individuals was a good friend of mine, Jesse Elkins from Grow Industries, who really specializes in, you know, the mechanical engineering of indoor cannabis and the transpiration and the, you know, the VPDs and all of the nuances that kind of go along with that. So that was the first thing that we really, you know, sought after was making sure that we had, you know, ideal environmental controls. And then, you know, the next step is, you know, kind of cross-contamination, and aseptic is somewhat of a fallacy because, you know, the microbial levels of the plant itself, you know, we're not, you know, dealing with computers here. So again, it's not completely aseptic, but looking at, you know, ISO 9 practices and, you know, good manufacturing practices, and then how you can kind of correlate that in with cannabis. So, you know, everything, I think there should be a balance between, you know, having technology and then having that hands-on approach. So everything from direct injection to our effluent discharge, we are able to, you know, capture and reuse 75% of the water through capturing all our condensate. All of our runoff goes through various filtration skids and then goes back into an RO. So things like that. And then, you know, we just launched a new partnership with TSR Grow, who's one of the first to kind of really be looking at advanced lighting solutions. So they remove the ballasts from the rooms. There's a server board itself, and then it gives you the manipulation and the control to really be able to dim up to a single unit at one time. So you can really focus on the PPFDs and the UMOLs that each strain selectively wants.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, I think that tech versus hands-on balance is a super important, you know, bit of background for this conversation, of course. you know, diving into those environmental controls. You've already started doing a little bit here, but I'm just curious, you know, I guess on a day-to-day level, as you're walking through the facility, what are some of the top of mind metrics that you're monitoring each day? And I know they're all important in their own way, but what are some of the big priority controls that you're trying to keep an eye on and making sure they're dialed in as perfectly as possible?
Yeah, I would say first and foremost, it's VPD. I feel like, you know, as your VPD is dialed in, everything else kind of follows suit. And so, you know, when you're looking at temperature and, you know, the relationship with relative humidity and then kind of, you know, looking at the transpiration of your plants, it's incredibly important to be able to, you know, manipulate and have, you know, higher VPDs when you want and lower VPDs when you want, specifically as you go into, you know, week 6 through 8, it's really easy for people to obtain, you know, kind of the 80-80, you know, but when you get into, you know, actually having to dehumidify and remove all of that water and get down to those, you know, 50% RHs, that's a challenge. So VPD is first and foremost, but then that kind of follows suit to then, you know, you're correlating that with your UMOLs, you're then correlating that with your drybacks, you know, taking, you know, different runoffs and, you know, looking at, you know, how your plants are, you know, responding to that environment in which you're providing them. But yeah, it all starts with VPD.
What are, just sticking with the VPD for a second here, what are some of the either maybe telltale signs of losing control of VPD, things that maybe growers could easily overlook and need to suddenly get a solution in there?
Well, I think the one that, you know, is every grower's fear and it is certainly something that's rampant here in Massachusetts is powdery mildew. And so I think that, you know, that's obviously a very telltale sign, but you're having a lot of other environmental issues if that's going on as well. But just, you know, from a, you know, not looking at it from a disease standpoint, I would say, you know, really focusing on your drybacks and focusing on your EC substrates, you're able to see how, when that plant is healthy and when you're achieving, you know, the correct amount of VPD, so you're not clogging those stomatas themselves and your plant is actually hungry and eating appropriately. I would say that, you know, nutrient deficiencies also correlate with that. And then, you know, just overall, you know, bud growth and plant health as well, you know, are certainly indicators of a proper VPD.
Mm-hmm. Of course, a lot of what we're talking about here is on a, you know, a fairly steep learning curve over time as growers get acclimated at the plant and you've been in the game for quite a while. Could you talk a bit about your own background? I know you mentioned Denver already, but just a bit about your own background and how you came to learn the best practices for all these different, you know, variables.
Yeah, sure. You know, I think it's all about, you know, kind of right place, right time. I was fortunate enough to be born and raised in Denver, Colorado. And at that time, it was more of a caregiver model. So when I got into the industry, there wasn't really any dispensaries at the time. This was back in 2016, 17. And so then, you know, as it kind of grew towards 18, I became a caregiver and grew for, you know, what I would consider indigent patients, you know, truly, you know, patients from, you know, cerebral palsy to multiple sclerosis to cancer, and really got a feel and love for the, you know, the symbiotic relationship and the give and take that the cannabis plant can be. And so I took that. And then by the time I turned 21, I kind of went into some more commercial sectors and started working for some of the larger firms in Colorado. And then in 2017, I was recruited by the owners of this company and then have been with Bountiful Farms since conception.
Awesome. Yeah, I know. Just to clarify, I know you said 2016 to 2018. Did you mean 2006 to 2008?
Yeah. My apologies. Okay,
no problem. Well, and of course, you know, technology really has been evolving pretty quickly in this space. And, you know, over the past 10 years, it's a whole different universe on some level. You've mentioned the balance
really
between. Yeah. And that balance between tech and hands-on, I think, is probably a delicate one. Could you talk a bit about the tech side of that and, you know, what the role of automation might be here? I mean, how much of this can ultimately be hands-off?
Yeah, well, hands-off is a slippery slope, you know, so I think it goes back to that old, you know, saying trust but verify. What I think that automation gives us the ability to do is actually incorporate things that truly, like any other business, it's all about scalability. So, and I guess to further elaborate on that, I mean, so in the back in the day, it used to be where, you know, when you were trying to look at drybacks and when you're trying to look at precipitation, you were trying to look at all those things. It was more of a feel. It was more of, you know, I mean, somewhat of a bro science, more or less. And now, you know, through automation and through environmental controls, you're really able to correlate these things and graph these things and look at the various equations, whether it's a linear equation or what have you, and really kind of go with the old scientific method of where you're really actually taking one variable at a time. And then as opposed to having, you know, multiple variables and then, you know, and actually being able to truly see what you're trying to achieve with that study. And so I think that's some of the benefits of that. But even with all the benefits of automation, I still think there's some things that are best to be done by hand. And I think one of the examples of that is trimming. You know, even trim machines, although they've come in, you know, a really long way, I still feel like a hand-trimmed bud in terms of the overall cure will always be far superior. But that really has more to do with the drying process itself, because through machine trimming, you're trapping in all of those chlorophylls, all of those chloroplasts. And so it kind of has a harsher smoke to it versus if you're actually allowing those to dissipate at a natural rate with, you know, like a, as an example with hand trimming.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that brings up a really good point, particularly on just the drying and curing side. You know, I don't think it's necessarily overlooked per se. I think a lot of cultivation teams are obviously have that very dialed in, but maybe it's not as, doesn't get a lot of the headlines, so to speak, as you know, the other cultivation phases. Could you talk a bit about drying and curing in particular and some of the variables there that you're particularly tuned into?
Sure. You know, again, I think this is where it comes into every grower and kind of how they skin the cat. But then I also think that, you know, I guess it's often used in NFL. They call it a copycat league. I think that cannabis is often associated with that as well. So, you know, you hear a lot about the 60-60, meaning, you know, 60 degrees, 60% relative humidity. I think that that is a great starting point. And then I think based upon your environment, you might want to go up or down accordingly. And also based upon the particular strains in which you grow. But you know, it's all about the low and slow. So kind of, you know, as I touched back on, you know, earlier, it's, you know, to allow that chlorophyll to dissipate at a natural rate is kind of what makes a Cuban cigar a Cuban cigar. It's, you know, they're drying that tobacco in a similar way where it's actually able to, you know, kind of, somewhat of a cocoon effect, more or less. If you keep all those sugar leaves on and then you allow that to kind of create that cocoon effect on the bud itself, it's keeping in all of those trichomes. You're not rupturing those trichomes. You're allowing those terpenes and those flavonoids and those ketones and all of the properties of the plant kind of do its magic on its own.
That's a great illustration there. You know, I know, obviously, mentioned PM earlier, certainly not a road that any grower is eager to go down, but are there other red flags or maybe problems, I guess, with the indoor environment that you see either at other facilities or especially maybe on social media? I know sometimes you'll see, you know, what not to do on Instagram, things like that. What should growers be avoiding that maybe they're overlooking right now?
Yeah, well, to me, I think that's what makes a good grower is really seeing all those things. You know, I really, you know, the whole master grower notion, I think all of us are still stewards of this plant. I don't think any of us have mastered this. I think some of us may be farther along than others, but I think it's a constant learning. It's a constant challenge. And, you know, even, you know, talking to growers who, you know, were involved in the 70s and the 80s, you know, the amount of different funguses and the amount of, you know, the different pests and then, you know, the super pests that have been created through the commercialization of cannabis. And it's, you know, so I think what I would say there is it's all about proactive versus reactive. You know, being born and raised in Colorado and being a part of the commercial sector in the beginning, I saw a lot. And being, you know, a young individual is 18 to 20, I held every position under the sun, you know, and to eventually working my way up to GM of these grows. And I think the thing, you know, is it's much better to be proactive than reactive, but then again, that all comes back to the facility design itself. So a lot of that you as a grower are, you know, only as good as the environment itself. You know, I use the equation a lot of, you know, kind of breaking into a thirds. I think 33% is genetics, 33% is environment, and 33% is the grower. And so, you know, going back to VPD and fluctuations of environments and You know, so all these rooms, whether it's HID or LED, you have such extreme heat loads when the lights are on. And then when those lights go off, if you don't have the environmental controls to dissipate all of that extra, you know, moisture, you're going to run into issues. And it doesn't really matter, you know, how good of a grower you are. That comes down to the environment. So, and then, you know, the kind of the notion of more plants equals more yield, I think is a fallacy too. So, you know, you can only, there is a limit to how many plants you can scram or, you know, cram in a 4x4 area. And, you know, all of that then has to do with plant health and, you know, giving the plants the adequate space to breathe and the adequate airflow is really, you know, again, is a proactive thing versus a reactive thing. So, you know, it's, I think that it's all about learning. It's all about adaptation. You know, one of the things I do like about Massachusetts is it's a pesticide free state, more or less, meaning, so, you know, in other states, there's an approved pesticide list. In Massachusetts, it's only 25B only, which 25B means that it is basically the least harmful. And then there's, you know, very minimal PPE required. So here, you know, here at Bountiful Farms, we are a completely pesticide free facility. And so how we're able to achieve that is through cleanliness practices. We have 4 air showers throughout the facility. You know, we scrub out as we come in. You know, in Bountiful Farms, we think everyone should be able to grow their own product. And certainly our growers do grow their own medicine at home. But oftentimes it's the cross contamination from other growers that's your biggest culprit. So, you know, we try to kind of alleviate those things by, you know, not wearing the same clothes from one grow to another. And then, you know, our IPM consists of, integrated, you know, beneficial insectaries, as well as, germicidal UVs throughout the rooms, for funguses.
Excellent. Yeah. A lot of really fantastic points there that again, sort of speak to that idea of balance in all things. Of course, you know, here we are, Zach, it's mid-January. One thing I wanted to end on was something I tend to ask a lot at the start of the year. I guess you could almost call it a New Year's resolution type question, but mainly I was curious, what are some of the things that you're sort of actively working on right now or studying, whether that's techniques or maybe even different kinds of genetics, anything that you're, you know, looking forward to accomplishing in the early part of this new year?
Yeah, we're really excited. We've done a partnership with a company out of San Francisco called Meristematic, and they helped us design a tissue culture lab. And so that's going to be taken off here, hopefully by the middle of February, but definitely by the 1st of March. And so, you know, there's a lot of other individuals that are getting into that sector. And I think it's incredibly important when you look at the polyhybrids and kind of the overbreeding that has taken place with cannabis that leads to hermaphroditic tendencies or genetic drift or potential susceptibility to molds or pests to really, you know, to use, you know, stem cell and, you know, to go into the meristematic and to really, you know, kind of learn that and to be able to clean up plants and then to be able to propagate them back in their original vigor is something I've been wanting to do for a long time. And I'm really excited to get that ball rolling.
Awesome. Yeah. Super exciting. I'll have to follow up on the far side of that and see how things are going. That's fantastic news.
Ooh, absolutely.
Excellent. Well, yeah, Zach, thanks so much for joining this week. You know, great to get a chance to talk to you and really appreciate your insights on growing indoors.
Well, thanks for having me, Eric. It's really been a pleasure. Thank you.
And that's a wrap on another episode of Growing Indoors. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Zach Taylor from Bountiful Farms. I certainly did. It's always interesting just to see the fairly complex science of environmental controls distilled into an art. You know, each individual brings their own background to indoor cultivation, and there are certain best practices and certain SOPs that in many ways transcend the industry. But at the same time, everyone's here bringing their own style to these data points and these metrics that are so important to the day-to-day operations of indoor cannabis. You know, we've got 8 more episodes of this series. We'll be coming out every Thursday morning, Growing Indoors. Very eager to get into some more subjects that pertain to the indoor cannabis grower. Please, along the way, like I said, if you're looking for certain topics or angles, get in touch via Cannabis Business Times social accounts. We're going to be putting this series together on the fly. We've got a lot of guests lined up, but certainly room to pivot if there's certain things that you want to make sure you hear from us and our guests. Again, one last shout out to Foes this week. Their support is making this podcast series possible. Check them out on social as well. Very pleased to have them along for the ride. And we will see you next week. Thank you.